Cheese Forward, where we dive into specific topics of interest in a fast-paced format. In today's episode, we'll be exploring how event producers are leveraging AI in their everyday roles. I'm Melissa Ashley, your host from Fuse, the ultimate community-building resource for event organizers. You can discover more about Fuse at fuse-events.com. And our special guest today is Brant Kruger, a senior production manager at IDCOM, a full-service production agency. With a lifelong passion for technology and a background in event production, Brant brings a wealth of knowledge to our discussion, and you might also recognize him as the host of a popular podcast called Event Tech. So welcome, Brant.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's nice to have you. Thank you. And let's dive into the exciting world of AI in event production. So I'm going to start off just by asking a bit of a softball question. Is how are you currently deploying AI in your everyday role?
Yeah, let's get right to it. I mean, it's one of those things that I think we have to be a little careful because obviously it's early days, but there are definitely things that people can be using these technologies for right now. And one of the things that we joke about on the Event Tech podcast is that this is literally the worst it's ever going to be. Like, it's only going to get better from here. And so we can joke about some of the weird things that we're reading in the news and people getting upset about what chatbot is telling them or they're falling in love with their chatbot or all these kinds of things. But it's only going to get better from here. And so I think rather... More than the kind of metaverse buzzwording of the last year or so, there actually does feel like there's some there for this one. And so to get to your point, how are people actually using it? Right now, I would say the best way that people are using it is either specifically about text, the chatbots, the ChatGPT side of things, is one of two things. So one is overcoming the blank page. So just, you know, write me a little something about, you know, an intro paragraph for this session that I've got right now. And so you take, you know, all of your session descriptions and you plug it into the chatbot and you ask it to write you this summary or that kind of thing. And then I want to be really clear about this. Don't just use it. you've got to proofread it. You've got to check it out. These things are far from perfect. I heard it described once as being kind of spicy autocorrect. It's one of those things that it is not smart. It has no knowledge. It is literally just guessing what is the next most important word, the next most likely word based on these large language models that they've been trained on. So much like the autocorrect on your phone is kind of just guessing, and many folks have played the autocorrect game where you just kind of let it go and see where it's going to go, comes out kind of making sense, but kind of weird. So same with these ChatGPT and these other generative AIs. They kind of make sense, they're kind of weird. So, but that being said, I have definitely used this tool for like just getting over that blank page hump. You know, when you're trying to do some writing, I write for a couple different publications. You know, what would an article about, you know, one of my most recent articles was about tech tools, you know, and just I wanted to see what it would come back at. And I was left with, you know, actually, that's a good structure. I like the way that's structured. I wouldn't have necessarily thought of that myself. And now I've got kind of an outline of how to go with this article. And oh, I kind of like that idea. I like that idea. Pick and choose. Get you over that blank page. But please, please, please don't turn it in. Don't turn in your homework as written by a bot. So that's one good way, is just getting over that blank page. The other thing I touched on briefly is summarization. It's really good if you feed it your own information as opposed to, you know, just what it's been trained on. If you say, okay, here's my last, you know, 12 articles about AI, summarize it in 5 points. And it's very good at doing that kind of thing. And so once again, if you're looking at session descriptions or something along those lines, you taking your long written session description and cutting it down to a good title, or maybe writing learning objectives. I hate writing learning objectives when I'm presenting as a speaker. It just feels forced. It feels unnecessary. I hate doing it. I've done some pretty good tests on, hey, here's what my session is about. Write me 3 learning objectives. And you're like, yeah, just tweak that a little bit. Once again, don't just turn it in. And away you go. So right now, I'd say the 2 biggest ways people can use this technology right out of the gate, just specifically about the chatbot versions, is overcoming that blank page and then using it to summarize. Now, there's more to come in the future, but for now, that's really how I think the two.
So that's really. So it sounds like really there's an efficiency component at play here. But do you think it actually makes you better at your job?
I think it does, in the sense, again, it's not just you and it's not just it, right? Either one of those. And so it's the combination of the two. In one of the most recent articles, somebody used the phrase chimera or a centaur or something like that, right? Where it's part human, you know, part something else. And so I think it's the combination of the two. Chess players have been doing this for years. You know, we've had computers that can play chess. We've had people that can play chess. We've had computers that can beat people. But the truly devilish chess players are using a hybrid of computers suggesting things and then using their own knowledge of the game. The combination of those two makes the most dangerous, most powerful opponent. And so it really is a tool that we're using to be more efficient, as you just said, and to be potentially better at our jobs. I don't know if you want to get into it yet, but we can also talk about the visually generative AI.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the imagery, because everybody, it seems like everybody talks about ChatGPT, but that's really just one tool, correct? So there's a whole image side, and then there's a whole other host of tools. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, great point. First of all, yeah, ChatGPT has kind of become the Kleenex of AI chatbots. You know, that's what everybody is using. That's the phrase that caught on. There's hundreds of them. You know, Google's got their own. Microsoft has their own. You know, these are all different models. They're trained on different things. ChatGPT-3 is different models than ChatGPT-4. So yeah, don't get sucked in that there's only one of these and it's ChatGPT. There's hundreds of them. And I do encourage folks to try different ones and see which one works best for you. I've gotten the best results out of ChatGPT. Now, on the other side, the other kind of generative AI, it's generating new things that has caught on, are the visual generative AI. So Midjourney, DALL-E, these types of AI are creating out of whole cloth new images based on being trained on all of, you know, images from the internet and all open source, and that's a whole nother discussion. Adobe has just recently come out saying that the generative AI in Photoshop, they will actually indemnify you against copyright infringement because they have specifically trained their AI on copyrighted materials they own, stock footage that they own, and images that they own. And so they're saying, hey, we're so confident that this is not going to accidentally pick up the work of some random author off the internet. We're actually going to indemnify you from legal action if somebody tries to sue.
That's actually big news, because that's been a big question, is who owns
it? Has, and it's going to continue to be a question. And so some people are even hypothesizing that even if it's not based on some other artist's work, who owns the copyright if I use this tool to create something new? Now, I would say I do, just as much as if I used a tool like Photoshop to create something totally new. It's just a tool. But the other, you know, so on the generative image side, what we can talk about in our industry is what we've been experimenting with at IDCOM is using it to create new stage sets that nobody has ever heard of, or at least get ideas. And so you can put in a prompt that says, show me a stage set made of these five colors as the primary colors, incorporating geometric designs such as hexagons, you know, just whatever you can think of. And then it actually draws it in a photorealistic looking way. Now, much like we were talking about the chat stuff, there's little weird things, right? There's, you know, sometimes you'll see someone that has no fingers or too many fingers or those kinds of things. You know, it's not perfect. Again, you wouldn't want to just turn it in and say, hey, client, good news, I have these six stage renderings. You're going to want to bring them into Photoshop, edit them up a little bit. But it's, again, getting you over that blank page. Yeah. You know, you're not just staring at an empty CAD drawing going, how do I design some kind of new stage set? You know, it gets the juices flowing, it gets things going. And so we're, you know, and very, very quickly, you know, comparatively speaking, compared to having to completely design something in CAD and then bring it into, you know, Unreal Engine and then render it and all this kind of stuff. So once again, efficiency and this hybrid of approach, you know, I know hybrid is a totally different thing in our world right now, but, you know, this kind of combined chimera type thing where artists and creatives are using these tools to create new things that have never been seen before as far as stage sets and lighting ideas and all of that kind of good stuff.
So those are some great examples of how, whether you're using the visual or using the text base, how it can really help impact event production. It sounds almost like it's your own personal brainstorming buddy, right? Except it has the ability to help illustrate what you've been thinking. So with all of these apps coming online, and I know you mentioned on the ChatGPT or the tech side that you found ChatGPT so far to be the best, How do you go about choosing them? What are some of the things that you're looking for when you're trying to figure out which of these apps may be the best for your for someone to work with?
Yeah, I think in both examples of Midjourney for doing generative visual AI and then ChatGPT as far as the chatbots, I really just kind of tried them and it was like, oh, I like those responses better. You know what I mean? Yeah. So as it creates those summaries and creates those responses, I think it's kind of a subjective thing of just like, I just like that better, or that one doesn't seem to, the term people are using, I'm not a big fan, but hallucinate as much, right? Yes. Where it's just making stuff up. You know, there was another recent news article about a lawyer that used ChatGPT to yes. create his brief, didn't double check it. You know, all of the links were fake, all of the references were fake, and he got in big trouble. So, you know, they hallucinate sometimes. They just make stuff up and they do it confidently, which I'm very used to in my family. We have a tendency to do exactly the same thing where you just kind of you just say it very confidently and people believe you. So it's one of those things. So it's you have to be careful with it, but it can definitely be one of those things that's going to overall improve. I think I went sideways off your question. Sorry.
No, you didn't though, because really, I think just to sort of summarize, like what you're saying in terms of where event planners should get started is a trial and error, right? You use it to get over the blank page, use it to get great new ideas, make sure that you always tailor what comes out of there, that you're checking those responses, and that you're really thinking of them as brainstorming tools, as replacement tools, right? So if I'm an event planner and I'm listening to this and I want to go get started, would you suggest that they start more on the tech side, the image side? Where do you think, if I've never engaged before, how do I sort of dive in?
Either one. They're a lot of fun, I'll be honest with you. Midjourney is free to start with. The only downside with the free plan is everything's public. So like as you're creating stuff, just know all, you know, what you're typing in for your prompt and then what is being resulted is public. But that's also kind of the fun, because then you can start to see what other people are doing, what are they putting in their prompt to get those results. And then you can start playing around with it and adding. There's some voodoo to this stuff where like I don't know why, but when I include, you know, this in the prompt, I get a better result. And nobody's really sure why. but you know, you can use those, you know, watch what other people are doing as far as sizing and shaping and all of those little prompt engineering. And then, so if you're a more visual person, maybe play around with the generative visual AI stuff. If you're more of a text-based person, or you have to do a lot of summarizing or a lot of, you know, again, learning objectives and those kinds of things, you might want to play around with the chat side. But they're definitely fun for both. And so I would strongly encourage people to just go play with it when you have a couple minutes. And it's a great thing to do, especially the visual AI. Whenever something pops into my head, I keep that tab open in my browser and I just go over and click on it and just see what develops. Or somebody says something funny at an event and you just go type it in and see what it was. That we were at an event and someone kept talking about cheese courses, like, you know, like for dinner. And the audio person joked on the headset. He's like, I couldn't understand why they're talking about cheese corsets. And so we typed cheese corset into the generative AI just to see what it would make. And it made these weird, bizarre cheese corsets, just like you think it would be.
Yeah, I guess it would.
So, yeah, and so it's funny. And they're photorealistic, and they're like, oh, that's what a corset would look like if it was made of cheese. So it is just a fun, dumb thing to do to kill the time, you know, when you've got a couple minutes. But it is also, I think, important for people to play with this stuff, because they are going to be tools that we're going to be using more and more.
And I think that's really the key. And thank you for sharing all of this great insight. Is there, as you said at the very beginning, it's only going to get better. It's not going to go away. It can be a lot of fun. It can save you a lot of time. It can help you with the brainstorming. So why not dive in and just test? There's no harm, no foul, right? Just be really careful with how you use your output.
Exactly. Yep. Great. Don't, you know, don't count on it to be the end all and be all. Don't count on it to be accurate. All of those kinds of things. Just use with caution.
Use with caution. I think, all right, that's a great way to end. Thank you so much, Brant. Your insights today were really valuable, and I really appreciate your time as well as your expertise. It's super helpful.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you all for joining this Fuse Forward discussion. If you haven't already done so, join our LinkedIn group, Fuse Community for Event Professionals, to stay up to date on future episodes of Fuse Forward. See you next time.